Initiate Cowrat Podcast.
Okay, so what we're going to talk about board games today, and we brought in a very special guest, Jim, the Jim we often refer to, especially in the context of gaming.
Board games, yes.
All right, so you mentioned you had a very recent game experience. Why don't you lead out with that?
So I was at my brother's house, and we were waiting for his 3D printer. It said 3 hours. And he said, "What do you want to do?" I'm like, "I don't know." And he pulled out, he said, "Well, we got this board game for our wedding, and I don't know how to play. I don't know what it is. Let's open it up and find out." It's called Azul. It's a fun little game. It's a, do you know what it is or no?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. The look on your face was like, oh, I know.
I, of course, have heard of it.
Oh.
We would expect as much.
So I'll talk about the game a little bit, but then I'll tell my story. So Azul is a, you're building a wall of tiles, and so you have to collect different color tiles and try to match them up, and there's different rules on which ones you can collect and how many, and you're trying to fill spaces in certain ways to get more points. And so the idea of the game comes from there's a palace in Portugal that is all kinds of colored tiles all over the place, and it looks amazing, I guess. And so whoever came up with the game was looking at this wall of tiles and like, oh, we can make a game out of this. And so it's kind of, I don't know if some of the tiles actually look like the tiles in this palace. But so the idea of the game comes from this palace in Portugal.
Sure.
And so we're reading the directions, and it says, the player who most recently visited Portugal goes first.
I was like, what? Right. Nice. I'll get right on that.
So I'm looking around the room. I'm like, are we in some weird minority that people haven't been to Portugal?
Portugal is not a very large country.
I don't know. It was bizarre.
So you rolled the dice.
Yeah. I think we just picked. I looked at my brother. I'm like, who should go? He just goes, youngest first. All right. So one of my kids was with me, so he went first. Anyway, it's a fun game.
So tiles, so is there a dice involved? What controls the turn?
So at the beginning of your turn, so there's seven different piles of tiles that were set up randomly. And you can take all of the colors from, you pick a pile and you take all of the matching colors from that pile. So this pile might have three red ones, and that pile has two red ones. That pile might have four red ones. But then the rest of the tiles that you didn't pick have to go in the center of the board, and that keeps piling up. And then you might find out, oh, now the middle pile has six red ones. I wish I would have waited until the red tiles were put into the middle. So you're deciding, do I take what I can get now or wait till the big pile gets bigger? So it's a decision. That's your first decision. What should you...
So do you have to, get rid of all your tiles or something? Is there a downside to taking things in the middle, or you just have to wait?
There's not a downside. If you collect too many tiles, then you get... the tiles that you don't end up using are negative points.
Aha.
So you want to collect the right amount, ideally.
Always get you.
So, yeah, you can collect less or more, but you always have to take all of the tiles that match. You can't say, well, I'll take three red ones and leave the other two. You have to take them all. And then there's these five rows that you could put them in. The first row has one space. The second row has two spaces. Third row has three spaces. I think it's up to five. And then so once your row is filled, then you can take a tile from the filled row and put it on your wall.
And the point is to build the whole wall, right?
Right. The point is to fill your wall as much as you can before the end of the game.
Dang. Sounds like it takes a little while to fill your wall.
It's not very big. It's, I think, 5x5.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
But yeah, so you're trying to avoid the negative points. There's a first player token, so that's cool. If you do a particular thing, that you get to take that token, but then it gives you one negative point if you take the first player token. So, and then every time you place a tile on your wall, you get a certain number of points. If you put a tile adjacent to one tile, you get 2 points. If you're adjacent to two tiles, you get 3 points. So you can, certain moves will give you more points than other moves. And then once all the tiles from the middle of the table are gone and all the piles are gone, then you stop and add up your total scores and see who got the most. Probably can't picture it very well from my explanation, but
it was probably an inexpensive game.
Probably. I don't know who bought it or how much they paid.
And semi-portable because it's not,
it's not,
not a
well,
lot of area.
It's kind of like Agricola in that each player has their own little board that they're working off of.
Mm-hmm.
So you're putting tiles on your own board, trying to fill up your rows, and then your wall is also on the board, and your negative point counter is on your board, and your actual point counter is on your board.
Yeah, if memory serves, I think they got the contents up to where it can make a $30 price point or something like that.
Probably right, yeah. But the tiles are cool looking. They're not boring. They're colorful and have little designs on them, little flowery, whatever.
Cool.
Something you might see in Portugal, I guess.
Allegedly.
I'll be watching for it.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
I have a theory that's forming that sounds like, what's the wing
Wingspan?
Game? Wingspan, yes. I have a theory about that game that spills over into this one, which is probably...
Birdwatcher? Ornithologist?
Yeah, that.
Either one.
Developed that game to help teach your students or something like that. So this guy must have been like really intrigued by Portugal or something. I don't know.
Right. Or this palace or something.
Yes. Yeah, that.
You know, I often wonder about the games that people make if they come up with the mechanic first, because the game designers are a lot of times the ones that make it big. They like design the mechanics and they're like, okay,
what theme can I wrap around?
What can we
this?
Hang this on? Yeah. So it's, I don't know, like maybe 50-50. It sounded a lot like a game that I do have that's called Alhambra, which is about a big structure that's in Spain, not Portugal. And it's about drafting tiles and building this. Apparently, the Alhambra was this big thing that many, many kings and administrations built onto. And so it has a lot of different influences and this, that, and the other. And I don't even know if it was ever finished, but so certain tiles are worth certain points and you score three times. And it's like in the first round, these are worth so much. And then these are worth so much. And the last one, these are worth so much. So you kind of figure out which one you're going to build and you have to buy the tiles. So you just have to get money. And it's a fun little game. It's been around for a while, not as long as like Mancala or anything like that, but it's been around for a bit.
Oh my goodness. So what's that? Let's say that one again.
Mancala.
Mancala.
It's like, this is like an ancient game. It might have been older than backgammon. It's where you have, you can play with little holes that you dig in the ground and stones. I mean, buy-in is really, really low.
Is it usually on a little wooden rectangle with little
pits and you have the little glass things in it?
I've seen it. I think I played it.
Yep. Apparently that's been around longer than our country. longer than several countries probably, so...
Game that we bought for the family, I guess, but three years ago for Christmas. We haven't played it much lately, but it's called Cosmic Encounter.
You have that?
Yeah.
Oh.
We played it with Ben, your son.
That I'm not terribly surprised about, but I'm pleased that you have that. Give me a call the next time you play that.
We should plan a time to play it and call you.
intentionality.
Have you played it?
I have not.
Oh, it's kind of fun.
I've been in the same room while it was being played because, you know, it was up at the con, but I did not play it. I think, was Ben playing it? It was either Ben or Peter.
So each player is an alien race and you're out in space. It's funny how people talk about, like, these people come from space. Like, well, if we went to their planet, we're the ones from space. Everybody's from space or no one is.
Right.
Everyone's from a planet, right? And so you can play it two ways. The first time we played it, we didn't have the alien race cards. You randomly draw an alien race card, and that gives you special abilities that no one else has.
Right.
Or you can just play without those, and just it's a little easier to play without them. But the goal is to colonize the planets in other planetary systems that your opponents own.
Yep.
So you're trying to colonize each other's planets. I think each player has five planets.
Rude.
And the way you do it, one cool thing I like about the game, sometimes it's fun to play a game like where you're intentionally trying to destroy the other player and attack them aggressively.
I don't know, Tim, can you explore that feeling a little bit more?
But then sometimes all it does is just make everyone angry and nobody has any fun. So this kind of does a little bit of both. Like, so you are against the other player, although you're just trying to live on their planet. You're not trying to destroy them.
But, coexist.
Right, well, kind of. But you draw a card that tells you who you're going after next. So you're like, it wasn't my fault. The game told me I had to come to you.
The game told me my hands are tied.
Determined who the enemy was, I see.
Right, so you don't have to decide who you're trying to...
Well, that's actually pretty nice because there's a whole bunch of conflict-avoidant people out there that probably would enjoy the game.
Right.
But if you're like, okay, and you just pick who you want to grease out, it's like, oh, man, do I have to? I don't want to choose.
So, and then once the card tells you whose planet you have to go to next and try to colonize, then you have a deck of cards in your hand, I forget exactly, but they have different numbers on them, or there's one card that says, like, what's the word? You either fight or diplomacy. So you're either trying to resolve this conflict with fighting or diplomacy. It's been so long since I played it now that I can't remember this part of the game, but so what's in your hand versus what's in the other? It's almost a little bit like a poker. Like, mm-hmm. I wish if I knew it was in the other guy's hand, I would know what to do. So maybe, right. And depending on what you're like, well, okay. How about we do this? And you're like, well, is he bluffing? Does he actually have the cards to back it up? And if you're like, both agree, like, nope, we're going to fight. And then you lay your cards down and whoever's got the best card wins or whatever. But if you, whoever has the diplomacy card always wins or something like that. I can't remember. Like,
that's a little escapist thinking.
Right, yeah.
I knew he was bluffing.
So,
I knew he was bluffing.
I can't remember exactly, but so it's fun. It's a negotiation game. You're trying to see who's got more power, but don't get into a fight you can't win. And
like the land war in Asia.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Always start in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
All sorts of other really solid pieces of advice flowing around here.
And if I remember right, the way you win is, I think you have to colonize, I don't know if it's at least one planet in every system or all the planets. I can't remember. Something like that.
Talk briefly about the con. So it's the con of the North.
The con of the North. That actually doesn't have any, you know, soundtrack to it or anything like that. It's the price to get into it is like $25. And it's run by volunteers. I actually volunteered once because I am so noble and wonderful that way.
Do you get a break?
No, but I got some free merch, and I was pretty happy about that. So, and it's a place where people say, okay, I'm going to run a game, and the people that run games get all their information in by a certain date, and then everybody signs up to play games, and if you're really good at administration and you don't have to go to the bathroom much, you can probably play games mostly from Friday to Sunday solid.
So, and if you're not a volunteer, you just walk around and sign up in an open slot? Is that right?
Yeah, so they try and schedule everything. Most of the games are scheduled before the con actually happens. Some of them are open at the time of, so you can like kind of find some things to play if you're just like itching to do that. But I always find out that the ones that I want to play, I either get into them once they open it up because I often run a game now. Mm-hmm. I often run more than one game. and so the people that are actually running games, they get first crack at the schedule before all the hoi polloi people that are just showing up to play. So,
it's
very, very elitist, very class divisions in the con.
I hear it's all about the buffet on Sunday morning.
Oh, yeah. That's optional in
so they
theory.
Probably... So they probably avoid, nobody's playing Risk at this thing because they're not going to tie up a table for 10 hours.
Oh, actually, what's the longest slot that I've seen? I think it's an 8-hour slot that I've seen.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because they not only do board games like normal people, they do they do role-playing games, which can go on forever and ever, amen. And they actually have the really strange people. They have the LARPers, the live-action role-playing game
people. Wait a minute, is this board games or is it anything that you can call a game?
It's most anything that you can call a game that you don't have to run electricity through, I would say.
Okay.
So they have it all there. I've never tried to do any of the role-playing game because, you know, I have been instructed not to. and the LARPing is just way too weird. That's just that's just too far out. It's like out of the park, left field type stuff. So
that's once a year, Minneapolis. What time of year again?
Right at, and this is, I think they're like sticking it right to the nerds. They're like going straight to the nerd type thing because it's almost invariably on Valentine's Day weekend. It's like, if you're a nerd, obviously you don't have any romantic interests in your life. Or if you do, they're probably going to want to come too. So we're going to have it around Valentine's Day. I always thought that was a little odd, but they get the whole hotel and everything, and it's packed out with all these people wearing name tags that are strange. A lot of them are stranger than me. A lot of them are like one of the solid demographics is like 50 plus males that are overweight and have facial hair. It's like you walk around, it's like, oh yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So my son is, well, so
he's, he's a little deviant because he still has the metabolism of an ore furnace, as far as I can tell. So he likes the food.
There was one time I was hanging out with my brother and he wanted to go, he had go talk to one of his friends or something. I forget anyway, but so a friend of my brother who I kind of knew and then a couple other guys just randomly showed up and I saw them walking towards him like, I bet those guys play D&D. And they walked up and they're like, okay, guys. And they're like, oh, hey. And they're like, you guys ready for the D&D game yet? We're waiting for it. For the friend of my brother. I'm like, how did I don't know.
How did I know that? Profiling is a nasty thing, Tim.
I didn't even mean to do it.
I didn't mean to. It just kind of leapt into my head.
And there was nothing negative in that.
Unless it's prophetic and then it's okay.
I've played D&D. It's super fun.
I've played D&D, and I agree with you. I think it's fun. I was instructed not to do it anymore, though.
Oh, okay.
Actually, that's a weird story. I was in college, and I had done... I forget when I started playing D&D. It was probably junior high? Around then, maybe fifth grade, maybe before that. Anyway, I've been doing role-playing games for a long time, and in college... I was rooming with this guy who's not a believer, but he did play D&D, so we hung out a lot, and we had some fun together. And one day, God told me to quit. And there ensued a conversation between myself and God, you know, because I was coming with all these reasons, you know, reasons. Gotta love the reasons. Concrete, linear, rational guy. So I was like, all these reasons why it would be a worthwhile thing for me to continue to play, especially with my unsaved roommate. Yeah.
Right?
It's like, you know, this is like, it's like what they tell you not to do, evangelical dating or something like that.
Missionary dating.
Yeah. Okay. So
but you can play as a paladin and talk about Jesus and stuff. Right?
Yeah. Because that's always what I did, for sure. It was interesting. Through the conversation, God did not say much. There was not a lot of...
This is not a negotiation.
There was not a lot of returning chatter from him. He just said, look, you know, I told you to do this. It's like you either obey or you don't. And so I'm like, well, I call myself a Christian. Mm-hmm. You know, I call this Jesus person Lord. Okay. I guess that means I do what he says. And there then followed an interesting conversation with my roommate about this previous conversation that I had with God.
There's your missionary opportunity there.
Yeah, that was, he's like, I think you're crazy. I'm like, well, you totally can think that. But that doesn't change the fact that I'm not going to play anymore. And I still haven't played.
Not unlike we were talking about in episode 15, we talked about music and the whole thing of you got to discern for yourself. Is it good, is it bad? And D&D would be a big one that could be contentious because of where you can end up with the thing. And it depends upon the people you're playing with. But again, God somehow drops a hint that you don't need to play this anymore.
Yeah, this wasn't a hint.
If you call him Lord, then you don't.
Yeah, and I couldn't discern any bad influences that it was having on me. You know, I wasn't, you know, like going out at night and drinking blood and anything like that. But, but the fact of it was he told me to stop, and I'm like, well.
There you have it.
There we have it. Full stop, end of story.
So don't invite you to D&D.
You can do that. I will not play, though. So my most recent gaming foray was with an old reliable... Good old-fashioned King of Tokyo. Talk about a game where emotions can run high. Oh, my gosh. Have you ever played... There's this one family that has the game. They love playing the game, but they play it completely different from me. So, for those of you that don't know, King of Tokyo is a throwback to when, you know, you would get the UHF channels on your TV... Maybe ask your father about that. back when you had to hook the antenna up to the toaster to get the reception and get it. And it would show these things that were very low budget and done in Japan or Taiwan or someplace like that. And had two guys in foam rubber suits that would duke it out over a model city somewhere. And then they would cut away to people going, ah, and running away. And there are these fake explosions and it had really cheesy special effects. King of Tokyo is where you are, each player is a monster, and they're trying to win the game either by getting all the victory points or having all the other monsters die. So, very simple motivation. There's a little bit of strangeness in with the cards that you can buy, but That's pretty much it. And this one family, like the whole family, they all play trying to get victory points. And they try really, really, really hard to get victory points and not damage anybody else at all. At all. Not damage anybody. And me, I'm like, well, victory points are fine. I mean, that's okay. But you still have to keep people honest. So you gotta, if you don't hit them, they don't learn. So you gotta still roll the claws and do some damage. And
so you can win by getting up to what, 20 victory points?
Correct.
Or by being the last one alive?
Correct.
Okay. So yeah.
So
there's two ways.
And then we played two games with Ben and my son Peter and his friend Cyrus. And Cyrus's first time, and he didn't win either of the games, but I don't think he felt that bad because I didn't either. So, and I, of course, like to win.
You have to be at least this tall to attack the city.
Exactly, yeah. I should get a copy of that and put it in with the game. That would be perfect. It's a long time since I've seen that. Before that, we had the same group without Ben, and we tried playing Kitchen Rush. And Kitchen Rush was a little bit on the difficult side. It's a hard buy-in. It's a cooperative game, and the people tried to make it so you're trying to run a commercial kitchen.
Oh, boy.
In a board game.
Interesting.
And so it's kind of like a worker placement game, kind of like Agricola, where you put workers out and they do stuff. Only your workers are like 30-second egg timers.
Oh, no.
And you're timed. So you put your worker here, you put your other worker here, and other people are doing stuff and things are happening, and you have to watch your workers. And once they run down, then you have to quick get them and move them to the next place where they need to go to help everybody get everything done. And you got to take orders and get stuff out of storage and plate things up and cook them. And
I've seen video games like this.
You run out of food, and so you have to buy more food, and the dishes are dirty, so you have to clean the dishes. So they had all this stuff in there. And then the timer goes off, and everybody wonders why we're doing this. I've heard somebody say, I thought it was a pretty well-designed game, but I've heard people say, it's like, this feels like work.
Right?
So why are we doing this? Why would we do this if we're playing a game and it feels like work?
Wow.
Well, all games are problems that you're trying to solve, pretty much. We don't like problems in our lives. Why would we make...
Artificial?
Yeah, why would we make artificial problems? But we like it.
We like the challenge.
Right.
So those are my most recent things. If I went back one more, I was probably playing Endeavor.
With us.
With you.
Yep.
Where I got shellacked, if I recall. There was a Wind Placer show, and then after the stands had cleared out, then I went across the finish line. Also ran.
I don't think we talked about Carcassonne. I don't think we've talked about that before. That's, you've got little token things, and there's little tiles, cardboard tiles that you play one at a time, and you end up building out the board, so to speak. But the board could be any shape, depending upon how you arrange these tiles. There's a river that runs through it, and
hey, there's a book like that.
Right? You can farm, you can, there's the mission.
The monk.
Anyway, oh boy, spelling. C-A-R-C...
I'm pretty sure it's French, and I'm really bad with English, so right. I'm not going to get French.
Carcassonne, however that sounds like it's spelled to you. Well, we'll put a link in the show notes. So if you actually check the show notes, if you're able to, if you're listening on a computer, that one's fun.
My kids wanted to play that, so I'll try and rope you in on that one next time.
You have it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've seen it on a shelf.
Uh-huh.
Linda's cousin is super into board games, and they have a big bookshelf that's all, or there's no books, it's all board games. So anytime we visit them, I see it sitting up there. I'm like, it looks interesting.
Yeah, it
but
is. It's not overly difficult. I mean, there's probably more strategic ways you can try and play it, but it's lower cost of entry than some we've talked about.
Yeah, Kitchen Rush is like way huge.
Wow.
First time you play it, you got to... We lost so badly. It's like, you know, if you achieve these things, you win. And we weren't even close. It was really bad.
Is it cooperative?
Yep. So, what's your favorite game?
Oh,
how about one of your favorite?
I don't know if you guys covered this the last time you did the games thing, but
Memoir 44.
See, it's not that hard.
Right. I don't know. The good old standby would be Settlers. I mean, I have simple tastes. but if we have the time, Cities and Nights, I mean, that's a really good expansion.
Good game.
Some of the expansions are like, this doesn't really make all that much sense. I really like Cities and Nights. Endeavor, that's grown on me. Acquire, the boys love to play that one, so that's fun.
Yeah. You know,
they reissued that. It's got a different name, the reissue, but it's only like $30 instead of, like $100 on eBay.
Which, is appreciated.
Right? I remembered when we talked about Settlers on the previous board game episode, there was something I didn't like about Cities and Nights expansion to Settlers.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember what it was, but there was something about it. I remembered it. I was talking to Linda about it. And in regular Settlers, you collect, a city collects two resources. In Cities and Nights, you collect one resource and one commodity. What if I just want two resources? Nope, can't do that.
Build two settlements.
I don't like it.
Got to get the green track up to the third level so then you can just collect what you want when you
yes, that's
good roll.
True. That is the option. But the first time I played, I was like still thinking regular set. I was like, I'm going to get two sheep or two whatever on this. Like, nope, you don't. You still
you
only get
a sheep
one.
In a cloth.
But I don't want cloth.
Yeah, I could see how that would be offensive. Yeah, I could see that.
I guess what you have to do is plan that into your strategy instead of just wish that it wasn't there.
Right.
Or, not win.
No,
you have options. You do have options.
Just a pawn in this game.
Yeah, I've done that. I like Agricola. Agricola is still my favorite.
I think we talked about Agricola, but if...
And how your wife always wins.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Yes, she does.
We did talk about that.
There you have it.
She does always win. I've played her many times, or I've been in games with her many times, and I have lost many times.
All that playing, I'm just a pawn.
Well, no, you just, it's like, you manage your expectations. It's what you do. It's like, okay. It's like second place is looking like a pretty noble calling right now. So that's what you do.
She listened to that episode, and she's like, I do not always win. So she denies it.
So I heard this thing because my kid's in computers ethic class and they were talking about AI. And so he read things. And AIs are used to make predictions and stuff. And occasionally the thing that they're supposed to predict is very, very rare. And AIs are bad at that because they're like, well, the whole preponderance says this one thing's going to happen. So really this other thing isn't going to happen because they kind of round it. And so you could say it's like, yes, Linda, if you were an AI, you're like, yeah, you always win. you never lose.
Another game I don't, almost certain we didn't talk about it before. I think it's Boss Monster?
Boss Monster.
Is that the where you're building a level for a hero to go through and play? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Boss Monster. I really like the concept. The game is fun. Sometimes you just like a concept of a game. You're like, this is so cool. Have you heard of this, Rick? Have you played it?
Okay. Well, you probably mentioned it once.
And the 8-bit graphics.
Yes,
don't hurt either.
The cards are printed and they look like an 8-bit computer game.
Right.
And so you're the boss monster or the bad guy of the game, and you lay cards and across the table building a side scrolling video game. And there's a bunch of heroes waiting to enter games or castles or whatever you want. And so you can, some of the cards have traps and bad things, and some of the cards have treasures to entice the heroes into your castle. And I forget the details now, it's been a little while, but some of the heroes give you more points, and the further they get through your game, I think the less points you get. But what you don't want them to do is get to the end and kill you, because then that's bad.
Game over, man.
Yeah. and so you try to entice the heroes that will give you more points, but hopefully they don't make it too far and you kill them before they hit. But it's kind of fun. And there's all little tricks, like if you place this card next to this card, that makes the power of your...
Synergy.
Yeah, synergy is in there. So you're... And of course you can sabotage the other players and with certain cards.
That one is eminently portable. It comes in like this, it's like a double deck of cards and that's
right.
It.
Right, it's cards. There's no board or dice or...
That's a good game.
Also, speaking of compact games, can you remember what the name of that family is? I know the certain family.
The Tiny Epic Ones, perchance? They come in boxes about this big?
No, these are the ones that are, they're almost like little tiny cards. They look like almost like packs of gum. Ben's got a bunch of them.
Oh, those I don't have because they'd be falling down the back of my bookcases that are filled with games. And then, either they'd... just like collect dust or the cats would get at them or something like that. Mm-hmm. I have an interesting bit of trivia for you.
Mm-hmm.
I have decided that I am not going to buy any more games.
What?
Really?
What does that mean?
That means I have come to the place with my limited knowledge of games. Encyclopedic, though it may be. Mm-hmm. Limited, nonetheless. That I think I have enough. Actually, I'm sure I have enough. When you ask the question that way, like, do you have enough games? Like, yeah.
How many do you have?
I don't know.
Is it over or under 100?
Scarily, I also don't know that answer. So
over or under 300?
It'd be under 300.
Okay.
Gosh, I hope it's under 300. So I talked to the source of a lot of my games. Well, I get some of them on Kickstarter, but my kids have been buying games for me, or, you know, family and stuff like that. And I said, mm-hmm. look, I think I only want three more games and that's it. And I told them what the three games were. And they're like, okay. And they went out and they...
On kill bag.
Yeah, they did. They went out and bagged them all. I'm like, okay, well, that's it. One of them I actually got myself. That was a Kickstarter one, but I got it because it was so pretty. And then there was one that was a cooperative game that I thought would be fun, and it is. It's pretty fun. And then the last one was like the biggest, ugliest, most complex, interactive, competitive game that anybody could spend 2 weeks learning how to play.
Oh, boy.
And then try to take another 2 weeks to teach other people how to play. I kid you not, I watched the setup video for this game. And the setup video was, it was clipping right along, and it was over half an hour.
Oh,
I haven't gotten that one out of the box yet. But if you're ever wanting to invest a whole bunch of time that you will not get back, we can break out Kanban EV.
Wow.
What does that
so
mean?
Kanban is this purchasing technique. It started in Japan where you, when something runs out, you get more immediately. But you don't get more until something runs out or it gets to a certain level. Right. And so the idea is that's how you maintain inventories being...
So this is like a practice thing for Lean Six Sigma or
yes,
something?
Yes, it is. It's a buying technique. And they named the game Kanban EV because the game is centered around a factory for building electric vehicles.
No.
And they tried to work as much complexity into it as they could. And so you have a boss that, you know, looks at your metrics and everything like that. You send cars along. Oh, my gosh. It is a thing. And so Board Game Geek, they have a, like a popularity score, mm-hmm. and then they have a difficulty score. And the popularity score goes from 1 to 10, and the difficulty or complexity, it's more of a complexity score, goes from, I think, 0 to 5 or 1 to 5 or something like that.
So that game gets a 0 and a 5.
yeah, I don't know how popular it is. I haven't checked that. But it's like a 4.8 or something on their scale. It's really huge. The company has put out like three different games, and another one is also like that. And it was kind of a toss-up between which one I would ask for, because you certainly don't want both. it's like, how can you play this in a lifetime?
I have a theory about that one now, too. That was a training thing for the facility that builds the EVs.
So I have more questions. I'm fascinated by this idea that you decided not to buy more board games. So a couple thoughts. One, you told me probably 10, 15 years ago that when you were in college, you decided you were no longer going to buy any more T-shirts because you had enough.
Correct.
Obviously, this is a different thing than board games.
Yes.
Did that continue?
I have continued to not buy T-shirts, yes. Not buy T-shirts for myself.
Right, right.
Have you seen my T-shirt drawer? Oh, my gosh.
I was just curious. That made me think of that, and I thought, well, did you keep that promise to yourself?
Yep. That one, I think, that one's weird because that one in my mind is kind of like a vow. It's not like this other thing is like, well, I'm pretty sure I have enough. I should stop. This is like the board game thing is an attempt at wisdom, okay? The T-shirt one is like, I think I actually talked to God about it, and I don't know if that was a mistake or just, you know, something that slipped out, but, and I know there's protocols, like if you, in Leviticus, if you vow hastily, you can wring the neck of a dove, or you could do something to get out of it, but
There's a procedure for that.
There's a procedure, but I decided, you know what? I want at least some of my words to matter. So this is one of them that I've kind of held on to.
Cool.
For whatever reason. So, no, I have not bought myself a t-shirt.
So the board game thing isn't the same. It's not like a solemn vibe.
I don't think okay. It's the same. In my mind, they are subtly different, but functionally similar.
Right. Okay. So
it's amazing how we gyrate within our own heads.
My other question kind of was going to be, but maybe I answered it or maybe you answered it already, not knowing. If you go to the con, you're introduced to new board games all the time.
Yep.
Isn't that like a...
Or you have to sell one so you can buy another one.
Oh, maybe.
I haven't come to that particular thing.
juncture.
You know, I don't know if I'm working through, if I'm to that stage of grief yet, you know, where it talks about when you get into like bargaining. Yeah, it's like, so I might be in the anger stage or I don't know where I'm at yet, but I'm not in the bargaining thing yet. So, yeah, I look at the con and... A lot of the games that I play, because I run games myself, I bring the games with me, and so that cuts down the time that I have for trying new games.
That was my thought. Maybe you had already answered it, but go ahead.
And the new games that I played, like I played this one game, it's by a publisher that started out, they hazarded something on Kickstarter, and they're like, well, if we make, you know, 80 grand, we'll be able to produce the game in kind of a way that we think we're going to be able to do. And I think the Kickstarter went to like 3-some-odd million. And so they're like, hey, you know, when we shake this thing, money comes out of it. Let's keep shaking this thing. And so they were off to the races, and they've marketed so many, many, many games and taken so much of my money. But this game that I played at the con is one that I do not own, and I did not kickstart, and I don't know if that was post deciding not to get any more games or if I had merely had a moment of wild restraint as opposed to my normal staid, abandoned state. But and it was an okay game, and I won, which is always nice.
That was an okay game.
It was an okay game, and I won, but it was... I had this odd moment of clarity because the people that were running the game were gamers. Like, I, you know, sometimes think, oh, yeah, I have a decent game collection. I might be a gamer. Ha ha ha. Oh, no. No, no, no.
Yeah.
No, these guys eat, sleep, game. They had the little miniatures. They weren't painted yet because the game was new. But they were going to be painted, and they had shelled out not only the hefty money for not just the base game, but all the special add-ons that you can get with the game, but they also, and I'd never seen this before, somebody designed a carrying thing. Like, I've seen special, you know, like inserts that you can buy. After factory inserts that organize your game for you,
oh,
couple
gosh.
Of places. This one was like beyond. So it was designed so you can have your little miniatures and you can slide them by their base into these slots, two right side up and one upside down, so that they don't touch each other, which is important because when they're painted professionally, you don't want them banging around in the box,
right.
And you don't want them just lying in a plastic cradle because they'll still rock back and forth and damage their paint. So I'm like, wow, this is beyond where I would care to go. So I'm not planning on getting that game. If people want to buy me more games, that's fine. You know, that's a different deal.
Right. So,
to add a little plug there for my two good friends here, Rick and Tim.
Part of me feels like I should have more board games, because I like board games. But then another part of me is like, well, then how do you... If you have too many, you can't play them. They just collect dust. So is that
that's
part
why
of the...
you leave them in the plastic wrap, and then they don't collect dust.
Like collecting cars, is that
something like that? I think you're in a really good place because you got some games that you really like. I mean, you like Memoir 44, mm-hmm. and you like the Lord of the Rings board game, and you don't really need much more.
I guess, yeah. Maybe I look at other people and be like, oh, I feel inferior because I don't have enough.
Yeah, envying and covetousness have a lot to do with motivating the economy. They really do.
True.
What are the three things? The lust of the flesh, the eyes, and the boastful pride of life.
Right.
Yep. Board games don't really do much for the flesh, but the other two, wow, they can truly get behind those other two.
I remember as a kid playing Monopoly and just like feeling like just on top of this, this real estate empire. Like I was just so powerful. I was watching my houses build up and then the hotels, and it felt so good.
Big time. I'm on my way. I'm making it.
Oh, yes. You know, I actually got started playing games because I had played, like, I have one sibling, mm-hmm. my sister, and we played Monopoly. Mm-hmm. And Monopoly with two people is just like,
oh, man.
Well, there's only golf on TV, so let's do that. You know, and so I had played, like, some standard board games like Monopoly and Sorry and Parcheesi and a couple other things like that. Mm-hmm. But I had an uncle who was influential in my life. He is somebody that I admire and like. He had some board games that he was vaguely into. He was nowhere near the pathology that I have exhibited. But he had other outlets for that before he had one of those prodigal son moments where he came to his senses. But he got me my first, like, what I would call real board games. So it was one that was called Rail Baron, which is a really fun game. It takes a long time. Learning the rules is pretty simple, but to actually get to where the game is over, it takes a long time. And I often told people it's like the way Monopoly is supposed to be. So, you know, Monopoly is basically just going in a square because it's cheaper to make a square than a circle. And whatever you land on, you try and buy, because the person that gets the first Monopoly will win if they can, especially if they can keep other people from getting other monopolies. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Parker Brothers, I just wrecked the game. Nobody else will ever buy it now. But you just do what the dice tells you and you spend as much money as you can. Even if you're mortgaging things, which is a really, really horrible way to approach life.
But it works in the game.
It works in the game. Makes you win. Rail Baron is where you have a map of the continental United States and they have railroads that are somewhat analogous to actual real railroads. And you try and build a network and you go from place to place and you make money and you try and lock other people out or build your own network and things get acrimonious and you go back and forth and somebody wins and it's fun. It's entertaining. It got to the place where I would just play that game to just play it. I really didn't care to win. I just like playing the game. You just like just the mechanics of going back and forth and interacting with people. It was like, oh, this is really fun. So that was kind of like the thing that got me started. My uncle would get that board game as a wedding present for people. It went out of print, and it was being sold on the aftermarket for a lot of money. And one of my friends who knew about it, he called me up out of the blue one day. I hadn't interacted with him for a while. And he's like, hey, I'm in this store, this little dusty game store, and they have three copies of Rail Baron on the shelf. And I said, take out your Visa card and buy all of them. I will pay you happily for your trouble and for the games. Game over, man.